Uluru. On the 26th of October 2019, Uluru, otherwise known as Ayers Rock, was permanently closed to the public for climbing. That is excellent news. It is what the Anangu, the local Aboriginal tribe, has been trying to achieve for years. I don't want to dwell on the disrespect that the Aboriginal people have had to endure for the way their sacred rock has been treated. That is a long, sad tale. I'm only pleased that at long last it has been done. The following is taken from a memory of the first time when I visited Uluru. It was 4 a.m. when I walked downstairs in the hotel. I would not normally be up at that time, but it was no ordinary day. The stars, which seemed to shine more brilliantly there than anywhere else, lightened the edge of a deep indigo night sky. I was in Alice Springs, in the Northern Territory of Australia, and although we were in the desert, it was a cold morning. I'd flown, bused, and taken trains around Australia for some months, and imagined that I'd have adjusted to the heat by the time I reached Alice Springs. I was wrong. I almost passed out a couple of times from heat exhaustion, and but for the kindness of locals who took me off the hot streets and into the cool of an air-conditioned shop, I might have fallen to the ground. It was in Alice Springs that I learnt to always carry a bottle of water. Back then it was a litre, but away from the desert, a 300ml bottle is suffice. I've rarely seen any Aboriginals in the city, but the further that I got into the hot regions of Australia, the more Aboriginals I encountered. I remember being surrounded by a group of primary-aged children that grew quiet when they saw me. I stopped when they stopped, and they stared. As they drew near, they reached out to touch my hair and skin. I didn't mind. I understood that they were as curious about me as I was of them. They became emboldened when I smiled, and I let them look through the lens of my camera to view what I'd filmed of their town. There were at least a dozen of them, maybe more. They were all pretty small, no more than 10 or so, and most of them were much younger. A couple of them asked questions, and I answered. Children are so honest in their approach, I find it refreshing. I spoke with a few Aboriginals in the shops, and one woman that I met while out walking invited me into her house. I sat and chatted with her and a friend for an hour or more. Whenever I could, I'd ask people how things were for them. I'd heard and seen a few things that disturbed me on my travels. I asked other Australians what they thought of Ayers Rock being changed to Uluru. Many that had grown up in the area did not mind the name being reverted to the original. The Aboriginals I spoke with asked me not to climb on their sacred mountain. Out of respect for them, I said that I would do as they asked. Most of the group that I was with said they had gone especially to climb Uluru. I had too, but changed my mind after I spoke with the locals. They were so inoffensive in the way that they asked. I could not bring myself to go against their wishes. Our tour driver, a non-Aboriginal Australian, said the local tribe had asked him to ask us if we would consider not climbing Uluru and walk around the base of it instead. Three of us, all New Zealanders, decided to walk as they asked us to. The sun came up as we were travelling, and though the driver had the heater going when we left the hotel, sometime along the road he changed and put the aircon on to cool. We passed several car wrecks that had come a cropper and spun off the road. There is no speed limit in that area, and cars can go to speeds of 200 k's. He warned us to stay off the road if we heard a car and to only cross after it passed. Uluru was a dot of a distance that grew in size the closer we drew near it. It took a little over 5 hours to get there, with two stops along the way. Once you saw Uluru, you couldn't take your eyes from it. The great big red monolith is awesome. None of the pictures that I'd seen of it, nor TV programs, did it any justice. It was heart-stoppingly beautiful, and I loved it. Stepping out into the mid-40 degrees Celsius, which is 113 Fahrenheit, heat, I was unprepared for how much hotter it was in the desert without any airflow. I thought it was hot in town, but at least there is an occasional breeze and a coffee or ice cream shop available on every block. It was so hot that even the flies had gone to seek shade somewhere. Those that were going to climb walked noisily toward a queue. Ahead of them, people held to a rope in a long line that snaked its way upward, and we could hear them all talking. In some places, the rope swung. I thought it was caused by the climbers, but the wind whips around the higher they get, and they are more exposed to it up there. Some have fallen and injured themselves. Some have died. Buses and vehicles were arriving fairly regularly, and most opted to climb. I did not want anyone ruining my time while I was there by their chatter, and so hung back from the others. Finally, I was alone. The sheer scale of the big red rock amazed me. It was so huge and dense and deadened all sound around me. What had looked like little caves from the start of a track were huge caverns that looked like the mouths of a prehistoric monster up close. My imagination was doing overtime. It was so quiet, I couldn't hear a sound. Though there were people up ahead and above and behind me, the sheer size of Uluru seemed to suck every sound from the air. It was eerily still. There was no wind. The desert foliage and tussock grass that looked like nothing from the tour bus was as tall or taller than me. I began thinking about dingoes and how little Azaria Chamberlain had been taken by one. Pulling my cameras out always steadied me, and I took photos and filmed what I saw. But it really could not do justice to all that I was seeing and feeling. And after a while, I put the cameras down and focused on the experience. I'm glad I did. It's why I can remember it so well today. It brings back all the joy and the wonder of my time at Uluru.